I will be very brief. We'll only share a few thoughts tonight because I want to make sure we have time then to break into small groups for a little more discussion and some prayer in your small groups. So again, as I've been mentioning, we've been looking at the eight key characteristics of a disciple. We've been looking at them since January. And the number one is disciple is committed to growing in prayer. And I have a couple of scriptures that are on that main goldenrod sheet that we started with, Mark 1, verse 35. Jesus gets off by himself and prays. But tonight, I want to look at a different passage. I want to look at Matthew. I do have it on the sheet there for you. I just really have felt lately this urgency for praying for the lost, praying for kind of globally praying for the world and all the people out there that so desperately need Jesus. And so I wanted to look at this passage in Matthew 9. Matthew 9, starting in verse 35. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field." He called his 12 disciples to him, and he gave them authority to drive out evil spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. How many diseases?
Every.
Huh, interesting. Who knew? All right, in verse 38, it says, "Ask the Lord of the harvest." Well, when you look up that word that the NIV has translated as ask, the original Greek word means to pray, to implore, or to make supplications. Some of the other versions, the New Century Version says, "Pray to the Lord who owns the harvest." I like that one. The NLT, so pray to the Lord who is in charge of the harvest. Those renditions, we get the idea that what Jesus is saying here is pray for this. Pray for this. And pray to the one who owns the harvest or is in charge of the harvest. Like, it's his harvest. It's his harvest. It's not our harvest. It's his harvest. But we're supposed to be praying to him concerning this harvest. I want to read to you a quote from this book that he's speaking on this passage. This is the book called Radical by David Platt. And he's talking about this passage here. He says, "In a world where more than 1.5 billion people are without Christ," I didn't read that right. "In a world where there are more than 4.5 billion people without Christ and more than 1 billion on the edge of starvation, we have to begin somewhere." So where? Jesus answers that question for us. In Matthew 9, we see him surrounded by the multitudes and moved with compassion because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. So he turned to his disciples and said, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Do these words surprise you? They do me for two reasons. First, in light of all the sick and poor and needy around Jesus, I would have expected him to immediately start giving marching orders to his disciples. "Peter, you go to that person. John, you care for this guy. Andrew, you help over there." But that's not what he said. What is even more surprising, though, is what Jesus told them to pray for. I would have expected Jesus to say, "You guys see the need. The harvest is plentiful. So pray for these people who are harassed and helpless. Pray for them." But that isn't what he said. Jesus didn't say to pray for those who were lost. Instead, he told the disciples to pray for the church. Why do you think Jesus would look at the crowds around him with all their deep needs and then turn to his disciples and tell them to pray for themselves? The answer is humbling. When Jesus looked at the harassed and helpless multitudes, apparently his concern was not that the lost would not come to the Father. Instead, his concern was that his followers would not go to the lost. Now think about it. What happens when you and I ask these words from Jesus and put them in a world where more than a billion people live still have not heard the gospel? A fundamental reality snaps into focus. We are not praying. This is the only possible explanation for how there can be such great need, yet so few workers. The multitudes are waiting to hear, and our most urgent need is to pray for the Lord of the harvest to send out Christians into the harvest field. This is that step that you and I are most likely to overlook, and yet the one that is most dangerous for us to ignore. In the gospel, we have seen the depth of our inadequacy and the extent of our inability to accomplish anything of eternal value apart from the power of God. We are a planning, strategizing, implementing people, yet radical obedience to Christ requires that we be a praying people. Not long ago, a friend of mine spent a couple of weeks in South Korea, a country that has seen explosive Christian growth in recent years. Over the last century, some estimate almost half the population in the country has come to Christ. Church leaders there have been intentional about pointing to the power of God in prayer as the reason that they have seen such widespread spiritual awakening. My friend was staying in a hotel, and one morning around 4 o'clock, he was awakened by a loud noise outside. He staggered over to the window and pulled back the curtains to see a stadium filled with people. He wondered, what kind of sports do Koreans play at 4 in the morning? Frustrated, he crawled back into bed and tried to sleep through the noise coming from the stadium across the street. Later that morning, he went down to the hotel lobby and asked the manager, what kind of sporting event has been going on in the stadium? The hotel manager responded, oh, sir, that was not a sporting event. That was the church gathered for prayer. Is it any wonder that half the population of Korea has come to Christ? We live in a world today where there are very similar circumstances to what we see in Matthew 9. There are many people that are harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Man, you can't watch the news this last week and not see pictures of the refugee situation happening all over Northern Africa and Southern Europe. Just in our own community, as you look at social media use, as you interact with people on the street, you see a desperate and helpless people looking for hope, looking for something other than the pain and despair that they feel so acutely. But the problem is when we pray for them, it makes it not our problem. But Jesus said, pray for ourselves, because then it makes it our problem. Do you see the difference? Because if we pray for ourselves, God makes us the solution to the problem. We get sent. You know, I've shared it before. You're probably sick of me hearing it, but it was a powerful moment for me. As I'm standing on the roof of our children's home in Senegal, Africa, wondering how on earth I got there, and being humbled by everything that I had seen and what God was doing, and I just asked God why. And he just said, because you were willing. Because you were willing. Or when I went out into the remote villages of the Sahara Sands of Senegal, and we came into this village and asked them, have you ever heard the name of Esau? No. Who's Esau? That's Jesus in their language. And yet, in that village, we saw Coca-Cola products. And so that night, I asked the Lord, I was frustrated. I said, Lord, how is it that these people have never heard your name, not even once, and yet they have Coke products? And what I felt the Lord said back to me was, Coke is motivated by profit. My church is motivated by comfort. The harvest is plentiful. Pray to the Lord of the harvest that he will send out workers into his harvest field. He's waiting on us. He's waiting on us to pray so that he can move on our hearts, so that we can find ourselves in a remote village or with our neighbor across the street sharing the hope of Jesus. That's what he's called us to be about. Then Luke 10, it's the same story that we looked at in Matthew. Luke just adds a little something that Matthew, as a Jew, forgot. But Luke, as a Gentile, adds in. He says this. He says, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Go, I am sending you like lambs among wolves. Do not take a purse or a bag or sandals, and do not greet anyone on the street. I love how the one in Matthew ends with, he gives his disciples authority to drive out evil spirits and to heal every disease. So the apostles and subsequently us have been giving all the authority that we need to do this. It's not like we lack anything. And then when Luke adds his account to it, he reminds us that Jesus said, don't take anything with you. I'll provide for you. I'll provide for you. You know, when the Lord first called me into ministry, I used to own my own business. And after 12 years, I was actually starting to make some money. Life was good. And then the Lord calls me into ministry. And I'm like, well, how am I going to pay for that? How am I going to live, Jesus? You're crazy. He is crazy. You know that, right? And so I finally develop a plan. Well, I'll sell my business and I'll generate enough income from that that I can pay for seminary and live on it for a while. So I sold my business for 25 cents on the dollar of what it was valued at, and that still should have been enough. 1 year later, the money's gone. And so I cried out to God. I said, God, what are you doing? That was our deal. And he said, no, that was your deal. Now it's my deal. Do not take a purse or a bag or sandals. We lived by faith ever since. And God provided for us time and time again supernaturally. But he also says, go, I'm sending you like lambs among wolves. He's talking about persecution. Do we have persecution today? Yep. So why are we so shocked? That's why it floors me when Christians today are shocked by persecution. Jesus warns us of this over and over and over again. When we see persecution, we've got to be like, yep, Master told us this is going to happen. We're right on track. Today we tend to see the persecutors as the enemy rather than the harvest. Right? We tend to see the persecutors as the enemy rather than the harvest. The harvest is plentiful. Who's the harvest? Well, it ain't me. It ain't you. Must be them. So why do we keep treating them like an enemy? Man, I love the story of Walter Chizik. Walter Chizik was a Roman Catholic priest in Poland. And he got captured by the Soviets, carried back to the gulags of the Soviet Union, and eventually sent to Siberia. Walter Chizik's readings are extraordinary. He gets there, and you know what he says? As he is sent out with a hammer to break rocks in sub-zero temperatures in a foreign land, you know what he says to himself? He says, oh, cool. God changed my mission field. I guess I wasn't where I was supposed to be. And so he began to preach to the fellow prisoners while he broke rocks. And he would lead them on retreats. And this was what dumbfounded me, because it talked about how he would lead them on retreats. Well, they couldn't stop breaking the rocks. He taught them how to be on retreat while breaking rocks. He won the whole camp to Jesus. Because he didn't go there thinking to himself, oh, woe is me. Gosh, what's happened to me? God, have you forgotten about me? What did I do wrong? Why am I here? I hate these people. He didn't do anything. He says, oh, cool, this is my new mission field. And he just began to minister to those people. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Pray to the Lord of the harvest that he would send workers to the harvest. We also tend to pray for problems rather than a harvest. I'm speaking globally, but this can certainly apply personally as well. Lord, make this enemy go away. Right? Have we ever prayed that? We're faced with a threat, with an enemy, whether it's locally or whether it's geographically, globally. We see something on the news. Lord, make it go away. But Jesus says, pray to the Lord of the harvest. The church today is reactionary and problem-focused. We react to everything, and we only address problems. I got a mailer in the mail this week. That was redundant, wasn't it? One of those double postcard things inviting us to a church in town, and it was all problem-focused. If you have this problem, come to our church, and we will solve it for you. And the problem that they were mentioning in particular, I've dealt a lot with. Wow. Bless that church. They're going to need it. But we approach the kingdom as if it was a problem to be solved. We can't solve that problem, only Jesus can. If we're going to promote ourselves, we promote ourselves as, hey, come meet Jesus. That'd make a great mailing, wouldn't it? Just come meet Jesus. 10:30. That's all they need. That sounds a lot like my message from a couple weeks ago. Can we all agree that we need Jesus? You see, if we ask God to take care of one problem, then another problem pops up. Rather, we should be praying for the purposes of God and the presence of God. Lord, let your kingdom come, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Lord, pray to the Lord of the harvest. The workers are few. I know, this is a great thing that I've done to you. It's an evil trick. I put a link on a paper document, a printed document. So you can try clicking on that, or you can try to type it into your browser. It is a YouTube video of a pastor named John Malundi from Uganda. It's actually an interview. He's not giving a message. Somebody was interviewing him, and you don't hear the questions. You just hear little snippets of his answers. And he will go into more depth on this idea of don't pray for problems, because if you pray for one problem, then the next problem just comes up. Pray for purpose, the purpose of God and the presence of God. He's lived his whole life in Uganda, and he briefly gives this story, and I'll recap it because it is relevant to what we're talking about. Uganda was originally a nation that was just absolutely brutalized by an evil dictator, Idi Amin. And so for years, they spent praying against Idi Amin. After years, Idi Amin was deposed, and they thought, woo, freedom. But then an equally evil dictator, whose name I forgot, came and made it a communist country. And so they began to pray again, Lord, set us free from the communists, set us free from this guy. After years, he was deposed. Woo, we're free. But then AIDS came to Uganda. And AIDS affected Uganda more than any other nation on the planet. At one point in time, it was estimated that 75% of the Ugandan population had AIDS. Today, there's only a fraction of the population above the age of 30 because of that. So they began to pray against AIDS. And they saw a major breakthrough. They saw huge transition in the health of the population related to AIDS. But finally, this guy, John Malundi, he was a prayer warrior anyway, and he's praying. And finally, the Lord just spoke to him one day and said, John, I want you to stop praying for problems. Haven't you noticed that when one problem goes away, another one comes? I want you to pray for my purposes. I have a plan and a purpose for the nation of Uganda. I want you to pray for my purposes. And John goes into more detail on the video. But when they began to pray for the purposes of God, then God showed them how to be people of his presence, how to continually walk in the presence. He's got a funny little story in there about how to pray unceasingly while washing dishes, and it doesn't work. But he explains how God showed them how to be people of his presence. And once they began to seek his purpose and be people of his presence, then revival came to Uganda. He says, now foreigners will come and land in Uganda, walk off the plane and be like, wow, there's like something different here in the atmosphere. People say that when they get to Uganda, they feel that they can actually pray, and they've never been able to pray before because the spiritual atmosphere has changed. So we pray for his purposes. We don't pray against problems. All right, we're going to break into small groups here in just a minute, but I want to read this first little paragraph to you. If you've been with me, if you've been doing this with us since January, normally I have a whole bunch of questions that are very personal. Like, where is your prayer life at? Rank it from 1 to 10. Set a new goal for yourself. What are you going to do to get there? How are you going to know if you got there? Tonight's going to be just a little bit different. But the whole point of this paragraph here, the whole point of discipleship isn't about the accumulation of information. If you walk away from here tonight going, wow, that's some cool information Tim gave me that I failed. It's about changed minds, changed hearts, and becoming more like Jesus. It's about being obedient to Jesus' command and call. How will you use the information shared tonight to bring about that kind of change? So I've got a whole bunch of questions there. You may not get to all of them, but they're to get you started and to get you thinking about how you can change the way you pray, particularly globally and for the lost. And by globally, I do mean like even within our community. within this area, within the world, with the refugee situation. Like the harvest is plentiful. How do we begin to change the way that we pray for that? And so there's some questions there that you can work through. Here's the thing. If you take this serious and you begin to pray, Lord, send out workers into the harvest field, you know who he's going to send, don't you? Some of you might need to start packing your bags. Okay. The youth are going to go, you guys can go into your youth room, and tonight Brianna will lead the discussion. Everybody else, we're going to have James and Catherine lead one group, and John and Nancy lead one group. So James and Catherine, I'll pick on you since you're the younger. Why don't you guys move over to this side? We're kind of about evenly distributed now anyway once the youth leave. So James and Catherine will take this side, John and Nancy take this card. Kind of gather around. You can move some chairs in the back or go into the prayer room, one group. Just begin to have a little discussion on these questions, and then make sure you leave yourself a little bit of time at the end to actually pray. Because it would be really bad if we talked about prayer and never actually prayed. All right, so yeah, just grab some of the chairs in the back, form up a little circle there on that side. And